Hark, it's an 87th Precinct bonus episode, as it always is after the main episode, a few days later. You know, we're still here a few days later, a bit dustier, but still thinking about the heckler.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Oh, it's January 2020 as you listen to this. We were just discussing about quite how much we enjoyed this book and quite how significant it was, but we need to get down to the nitty-gritty, as trailed by Steve-O in the actual main episode, which is the book covers.
Well, yeah, I've given mine away, really.
Well, we'll go into that in some detail in a second. We'll deal with the copies that me and Morgan have got, which is the Orion edition.
It is.
Two in a Book, The Heckler and See Them Die, which I like because they are novels that follow each other.
For once,
well, they don't follow each other. That would be weird. Should you be reading the same books over and over again? Maybe in a loop. But yeah, The Heckler and See Them Die are next to each other in the sequence.
Yeah, but for once they've actually put made a sensible omnibus edition rather than just sort of blindly grabbing at the shelves
sticking
and just
a pin in it.
Yeah.
And the cover of our one is, well, what can
it's
we
say? It's quite good. I like the list.
They've used the cover of the Heckler edition, haven't they, rather than mash up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like the list of numbers that being heckled.
It's got some decent detail on there. It makes sense.
Yeah,
at
someone's
least,
putting a bit more effort on this one, I think, although the phone looks a bit too modern for the period that the book was actually written.
Absolutely, yeah, but still, it's not a bad effort.
Yeah, there's money, there's addresses, there's phone numbers, there's a phone. But aside from that, it's not particularly dynamic.
Not terribly exciting, but functional.
I'll tell you what's funny about this one. Obviously, most McBain stories start with the caveat that the city in these pages is imaginary, ... And that's normally the front sort of page on its own at the start of the story.
Mm.
In this, it's on the copyright page in small print.
Oh, I'd never even noticed.
Like it's a really important copyright point rather than an actual statement about the books.
I wonder if that's just like a sort of proofreading thing when this, like, someone's seen that and thought, oh, that looks like a bit of the legal spiel, let's put it on there.
I think it must have been something like that. Absolutely must have been.
Interesting addition in that it's got the afterword as well on this one.
Yes, now that's something important because that the afterword about the heckler, which obviously yours doesn't have, Steve, but we'll get to that in a second. One of the things we didn't say about the deaf man, and we must say now, is something that you picked up on, Steve-O, about Corella's relationships.
Well, yeah.
So, should we have a little bit more about the deaf man before we get into the sensation of you describing your book in full detail and giving it a good sniff? So, Corella, the deaf man, Corella, his wife.
Well, the deaf man's deaf, maybe.
Possibly.
But then Corella's wife is deaf, definitely.
So his closest relationship, his wife, is a deaf-mute. His nemesis is supposedly deaf as well. Although even in this book they cast doubt on whether he is. Am I actually blonde? Am I actually deaf? He says to himself in his head whilst talking to, I was going to say Douglas McDouglas. You just fill in any name there really, can't you?
Pretty much.
And the afterword in this book goes into some detail about how he came up with that.
Oh, right, okay.
Because the dedication in it, in our, well, your edition as well, but the dedication is for, this is for my father-in-law, Harry Melnick, who inspired it. At the back of it, there's a little sort of thanks. In fact, there's an after dedication as well to Herb Alexander, the editor from Pocketbooks. But Ed McBain tells a story in our edition about how he came up with the idea of the heckler. In fact, he tells us about how he came up with the idea of Teddy Corella as a deaf-mute character and ponders on the nature of having characters with disabilities. He himself talks about Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes. He says, I don't believe in the concept of good and evil. Evil is a theological term. But I knew that Teddy Corella was deaf and really good, and I figured if I could make this guy deaf and really bad, I'd have a nice contrast. So he planned it. It makes sense. It's not just mad coincidence that two significant figures in the life of Steve Corella, one who's shot him even at this point, and the other who's wept over him, saved him, made him happy, are both deaf.
Mm.
So it is an interesting one. Steve has just attempted to throw my book on the floor.
Yeah, well, I've never
disgust.
I've never read that afterwards.
The nature of different editions, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Has yours got the little after dedication to Herb Alexander?
It is, yeah.
Go on then, Steve. Let's dig into the artwork.
Well, mine's got some hairy legs. Hairy legs with some whiter than white socks, and then with black shoes, which we all know is a big no-no.
So yours is a Penguin late 60s, 70s edition?
It is 1979, I think.
Oh, late 70s.
1979.
Oh, published in our lifetime.
So
reprinted 70, 77, 79. So whether the covers from 70...
I think there are different ones for the Penguin range. Mm. Yeah, I've seen alternative covers for most of them.
Yeah.
But then these legs are in like some leaved undergrowth, presumably the park, and then in the distance there is the bright lights of the city.
And there's the addition of if your cover being slightly faded as well means these legs are really pasty white.
Very pasty. They are. And on the back there is a picture of a shire horse with 87 horse brasses.
It looks tired, doesn't it?
Very tired.
It's quite weighed down. With a shiny detective on it who's got what can only be described as an armour plate of badges.
85 police shields. It's only allowed out on cloudy days because if it's sunny, he keeps blinding members of the public.
So he solves his crimes.
Through mass blindings from the back of a shire horse. You don't see that in the TV series.
No. No.
Look as good in black and white.
No. I suppose not. That must have been what it was.
Oh, dear.
Mm. I mean, yeah, you do get the impression with that the art director's read as far as the first corpse turning up and gone, that'll do.
He's gone, chapter two.
My work here is done.
That's probably the key thing.
They probably thought, how can I depict heckling on the front cover? Whereas yours is... The best representation of heckling
is the phone, the instrument,
the
of
phone,
the,
and the list
the
of
instrument of the heckling.
The hecklees and the hecklaws equipment. Whereas this is just hairy legs and leaves.
What I think of when I see the cover of yours, which I hadn't seen until tonight, is the Goon Show. If our followers who aren't familiar with this classic radio comedy from the 1950s. With Spike Milligan, Peter Sellers, Harry Secombe, and originally Michael Bentine, they have a character called Bluebottle, and he's been illustrated in some of the script books and things like that. He's always got these really long, knobbly-kneed white legs, and you always imagine him sort of in this Boy Scout outfit or something like that. It just reminds me, it's like Bluebottle's actually been deaded again and left in New York for someone to discover. You rotten swine, you!
Although, it could be a Boy Scout who's just been kicked in the face by a shire horse, couldn't it? Well, and now he's kind of...
They're big horses, they'll do that to you.
See, if you put it at this angle, it looks like he's stood up.
It looks like he's wearing stockings as well. It's faded that much.
Yeah,
it's a thought-provoking cover, really. It's
you wouldn't necessarily know what you were getting picking that off the shelf. I will definitely take a photo of your particular copy of that and put that online as well.
Decent smell as well.
Good smell, you reckon?
Excellent.
Yeah.
These ones never have a particularly pleasing odor, do they?
Probably a 62 police shield smell, I would say.
Marvellous. Well, on the subject of the editions, I did look into the first edition of this because it was one of the hardback ones in Inner Sanctum, published by Simon & Schuster. And the original covers, it's quite simple. I'll show you guys this because I've found a nice reproduction, actually, of the wraparound of the hardback, which is simple. It simply says the heckler, then it's got a time bomb equipment, so dynamite and a clock, and then some graphic design around the name of the author. Yeah. So
it's a nice bit of design.
Well, the design on that was done by a chap called Tony Palladino, and you will know some of the work of Tony Palladino, whether you think you do or not. So he did quite a lot of books for Simon & Schuster and in this period. He was a graphic designer. But he was most famous for something he did for a book by Robert Bloch, which was published in Simon & Schuster. Can you guess what book that would be?
I would imagine it'd be Psycho.
Yeah. So he designed the Psycho logo, the word Psycho, with the sort of cracked through it.
Amazing.
Which was so effective and so striking in an image that Alfred Hitchcock kept that for when he made the film. But it was Tony Palladino who designed it for the book cover.
Amazing.
Originally, and he got paid, I think, from my notes here, which I will look at, $5,000 for the use of it.
Just a flat fee. Yeah. Wow.
And it's a brilliant logo. Yeah. And
it's been ripped off by so many other things since as well.
Yeah. Tony Palladino is an interesting character. So Hitch has worked with an artist from the Simon & Schuster stable, and he's worked with Evan Hunter, Ed McBain himself, on The Birds as well. So he was clearly... I'm assuming he's got bookcases, old Hitch, full of Simon & Schuster hardbacks and various things. Yeah. And it was published in Britain by TV Boardman, and their cover, although it's got the same intrinsic layout, the cover isn't the time bomb, it's just a man in a hat on a phone. Which, again, that's heckling, isn't it?
Well, apparently.
I was just reading in the afterword here. Yeah, this was the first of the novels to be produced in hardback.
Well, I don't think it was, because they've already been in hardback for two of them, so that must be wrong. Was it Ed McBain getting it wrong?
Yeah.
Well,
the heckler, because it was first produced in... It was first, right, okay.
I think it's the third or fourth.
Erroneous fact.
Erroneous facts. We've corrected
alternative
it.
Facts.
Alternative facts.
Yeah, it's an old...
Fake news.
Fake news. Stupid phrase. It really annoys me every time I hear it.
Yep.
I'll tell you what I've not mentioned. We've got a YouTube channel now.
Have we?
Which, if you think it means that you're going to see films of us doing...
There's cameras in here. Put my trousers back on.
This in the corner. So if you want to relive these episodes or see the new ones via the medium of your computer rather than your usual podcast system, they're going to be up on YouTube on our channel, which you can find by looking for Hark the 87th Precinct podcast. We're not doing anything mad with them, although I have got a playlist where I'm tagging in videos that people have put online of people talking about Ed McBain or things relevant to it as well.
Image are you going to have?
On the YouTube channel? Let me describe it for you now. Using our corporate colours, which is a particular blue and yellow that our logo has, we have a little animated logo, and then we have the waveform animated throughout. So you won't see anything, but unless we come up with some exciting new way of doing something at some point. It's just
so there'll be a real spike if somebody starts singing.
Exactly like that.
What's that moment going to be like?
And I recommend everyone pauses this and goes back and tries to stop YouTube. Have you ever tried to stop YouTube on a specific frame or scene? It's impossible. It's stupid. But they're up there because apparently people sometimes like to listen on YouTube. I'll tell you one thing. You remember we did that bit about Brexit when we were talking about the Guernsey foot or whatever it was?
I have absolutely no memory of that. Was I actually here? Guernsey foot?
The Guernsey ounce. It was. We were discussing about how unit measurements would just change the name after we go through Brexit.
All right, and so a kilogram would become like the
Alderney kilogram or something.
I like the Guernsey ounce, yeah.
And I'd trimmed that out as a little promo thing because it was about a minute long, and I've put that up as one of the videos because I'd done it.
A pro-Brexit propaganda? Bring back the Guernsey ounce.
No, it was because our...
yes on the 20th of April 2016 or whenever it was, I don't know. The Guernsey ounce.
Again on it at this rate.
Yeah.
But it's quite clearly anti-Brexit, as I think... Hark Towers is got that stance, and I put that on there, and I hadn't even advertised that there was videos up there yet, because it had the word Brexit in the title. Within a day, someone had thumbs down it.
Amazing.
Had they?
So some Brexit sod has gone looking on YouTube, looking up Brexit, searching for it, found our video, watched us laughing at this silly internal logic joke that we've come up with about the Isle of Dog's foot or something.
this
thumbs down.
This furious that we're mocking their desire to have their country back.
Or they might just possibly have hated the video.
It's
entirely possible.
So some just a disgruntled Brexiteer
jerk wasn't liking our Isle of Man pound per square inch.
Yeah, it was. I don't know what that was about. Oh, I'll tell you what we can mention. I've done three crimey things today, by which I mean crime fiction. Everyone.
Nicked a loaf of bread from Asda.
I shot that dog.
Ripped a hand dryer out of some toilets.
Yeah.
And then jumped off the bus through the fire escape.
That's a crime. It's unwise.
Well, it's probably against some sort of regulation. I'd describe it as crimey, though. It was crimey.
Well, in danger.
The bus was going at 40 miles an hour at the time.
Well, it wouldn't have been any of our
did
buses.
Like a forward roll when you landed.
Yeah, drop and roll. So now, I watched or have talked... So this is one of them. Right. Talking about Ed McBain having watched The Heckler on
so
TV.
So this is crimey. Is that a second one?
No, that's
included.
The Ed McBain stuff's all encompassed.
So that's one crimey. One crimey.
I watched
thing.
An episode of The Bill, which was written by P.J. Hammond, who devised and wrote, I believe, the series Sapphire and Steel, which I've never seen, ever.
Is that the thing which had Pierce Brosnan in?
No, that's Remington Steel.
Oh, right.
Which sounds like a razor blade.
It does.
Yeah, I really don't know much about Sapphire and Steel. Despite my love of TV adventure series, it's one I've never seen.
I was just going to say, for some reason, an alternative could be Samphire and Steel.
That's a Hugh Fernley Whittingstall.
Could be set in Cornwall. Samphire and Seals.
Samphire and Seals. Do they solve mysteries? Or is that just the food chain? Oh dear.
I don't know. We'd have to be.
We found the title for this episode.
I think they'd have to be based coastal based crime detection.
It's quite hard not to be coastal based in Cornwall. It's not that wide.
The seal guy just loves clapping his hands when Samphire could be the smart ass.
Samphire, his main skill being quite expensive in supermarkets.
Yeah, quite a salty individual.
Yeah. Oh dear. Samphire and Steel. Oh lord. But yeah, so I watched an episode of The Bill, and that was my second crimey thing today. I've been rewatching The Bill from the start. Series 5, episode 80 it was. And I watched the start of a Columbo episode. We've still to devise the Columbo podcast we're going to do.
Columbo one was it?
Sex and the Married Detective. It's from 1989. Ooh, it's where a sex therapist murders her cheating partner. But there's a sequence in it. And you'd never forget this once you've seen it. Because part of the cover that this person has is that they're at a concert, Columbo has to visit this concert hall. And when he gets there, there's a guy showing some students who are on a trip how to play the tuba. So Columbo's off at the side talking to someone and she's like, shush, 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 shush. Why Columbo? This is the thing that annoys me about Columbo. I love it. But at some point, surely he's got to go, I'm a policeman investigating a murder. Don't tell me to shush. But he does what he's told. And then the guy demonstrating the tuba is like, would someone like to try the tuba? And rather than actually get one of the kids up, he gets Columbo over.
Of course he does.
Turns out, Columbo, whiz on the tuba. He can play the tuba perfectly. So you get this scene of Peter Falk blissed out playing a tuba. And then it ends with like these school kids marching along behind Columbo as he plays a tuba in the foyer of a concert hall in LA.
Turn up for the books, isn't it?
Yeah, I stopped watching after that because that's the only bit I wanted to see. So what do you make of that then?
I find that quite, interesting.
Yeah, the later Columbos.
They were a bit.
Did feel like padding. And I wonder though, because Peter Falk kept getting more and more influence, I think, as the series went on. He was quite, you know, intrinsic to the thing, as he obviously was as the actor, but also in terms of what they did. Was it that they were padding for time and some writer came up with that? Or was it Peter Falk going, look, I've been practising the tuba and what I'd really like is 5 minutes of entire screen time dedicated to me playing the tuba to some infants.
He'd just been pitching this tuba idea for 10 years and then finally like,
the tuba murders? The Columbo solves via the use of tubas calling across the Hollywood Hills.
Did it have any bearing on him solving the crime?
No, other than he was in the place he needed to be for the next bit to happen.
Yeah, right. Fair enough.
It was brilliant.
It was worthwhile then.
So there you go. That's my crimey day.
Yeah. It's
very crimey.
Yeah, mine's not been as crimey.
Well.
One instance of crimey.
Well, it's been
I was reading a crimey book earlier, but, you know, not sure whether that counts.
Which crimey book?
I was rereading Murder at the Savoy.
Oh, yeah. Smashing.
Which, because I reread the first half of the back books a few years ago, and then I never ended up finishing them. So I thought I'd reread them again.
That's terrific. Did you want to have a go at pronouncing the author's names to see if you can do a better job than me?
Maj Sojwal and per walu is what I would say.
I think if you take an average of the two ways you've pronounced it over this and the actual episode, we've probably got the correct
somewhere
pronunciation.
In there.
If you get Kenneth split backwards, then it's probably
yeah,
right.
We could do that. We could put that in right now. So I think we'll conclude that we've some fire and seal.
Oh, it could be. Oh, better thought. It's actually Star's seal.
it's like a character called Sam Fire, and the psychic is just Seal.
Yeah.
Does he do Kiss from a Rose every episode?
It's a theme tune.
He Kiss from a Rose whilst bouncing a ball on his nose.
And clapping.
And clapping. While Sam Fire throws him fish.
Well, I think we need to stop recording now and get this worked up into a pitch for TV.
Yep. Absolutely.
Now, Seal hates seafood as well. Yeah. That's the recurring kind of theme. Because we're in Cornwall, like, everywhere's a bloody fish restaurant.
Some humorous incident with him being given seafood as the little bit at the end where they freeze.
Yeah.
Everyone chortles as Seal is disappointed that he's been served fish again.
Yeah,
he's
looking really...
Terrible allergic reaction over the course of the freeze frame.
Looking really... turning his nose, really disapproving some hake that's been shoved in front of his face.
Oh, there's
Sam Fire's
hake disapproval.
Sam Fire's kind of laughing.
Just tucking in.
Yeah.
Well, we've definitely got to work this up. Given that Chris Chibnall has now gone off to do Doctor Who, there's a broad church-shaped gap in the market, and I think Sam Fire and Seal might be the thing to win over audiences.
I think so.
So we'll leave you now to go and type that up on Kenneth and get him to arrange for a pigeon to deliver it to ITV. And I'm gonna say goodbye, as are these gentlemen.
Goodbye.
Fare thee well.
See you soon.